What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT, joined by my guy, Artie. He's an NFL scout for Film Is the Art. Make sure to go ahead, subscribe to his channel, check out his podcast, man. He uploads some pretty good content over there. We'll leave the link to it down in the description, the pinned comment section down below, man. What's going on, fam?
What's going on, JT? How you doing, brother? It's good to be back on here with you. It's good to be back, during peak season for us, draft season. So, just happy to be on here, happy to be able to talk ball with you again.
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. It's just cold as hell down here in South Florida, bro. I don't know when it started getting so cold, but it's in the 50s right now, bro, and I'm not liking it, bro. I'm a Floridian. I live in the state of Florida for a reason, and it's not to be cold. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm from NC, so it gets all right here. Like Virginia gets colder than us, but yeah, it's to be cold in South Florida. That sounds crazy.
You know what is cold though? The cold takes that I keep seeing on social media about Caleb Williams being overrated, bro. Like if you think Caleb Williams is overrated, I question if you're even watching the games, bro. To me, he looks like a generational quarterback. He can make all the throws outside the pocket, inside the pocket. He's an incredible athlete. He has good enough athleticism where he's the equivalent to a running back, especially with the way that his body's built. He's 6'1", 215 pounds. He can run through guys. There's not any throw that he can't make. And I just don't get the whole narrative that he's overrated. And with you being an NFL scout, bro, like, am I tripping? Are people right about Caleb Williams being overrated, overhyped? Like, what's going on, bro?
I mean, to be completely honest with you, it's kind of one of those things where it's like he's been talked about for so long, he's been praised so much, they have to find a reason to tear him down. It's the same thing we literally just went through last year with Bryce Young. This man was the Heisman Trophy winner. He threw for almost 5,000 yards in his true sophomore season at the University of Alabama, playing against SEC competition all year. And now him being 5'10 is a problem. Now him being 185 pounds is a problem. Now the arm strength is wonky at best. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things to where when you're great and you're so great for so long, they try to find a reason to tear you down. And for me with Caleb, it's like the only really thing you can really complain about or have a gripe about with Caleb is his maturity. Like, okay, yes, he puts the ball on the ground a lot. He fumbles. But you know who else fumbles a lot? Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson fumbles a ton. You know who else fumbles a lot? Patrick Mahomes, who is my comp for him. So it's just nitpicking. It's just talk to push their narrative. I found out a lot in our community, bro, that people sometimes try to say something that might be false or might be far-fetched to get their own thought out there so they can get the click of the day or whatever. So this whole Caleb Williams thing, in my humble opinion, is just a bunch of people that are trying to tear down a prospect who is built out of vibranium.
Now, are the character issues or the maturity issues really a huge deal? Like, is this something that could be problematic down the road, or is it just some light skin shit? Because you know how light skins tend to be at times. We can be a little emotional, you know, like people are making a big deal about him crying after losing to Washington. Like, oh, he's crying. They just lost. Like, this is really who you guys think should go number one. Like,
what I would say to that is if I'm an NFL team, that is the best thing that I could see from a college quarterback. To see someone who is giving their all for their team. I mean, all. That Washington game specifically. He was running around. He was juking people out their shoes. Like, he was doing all he could to help that team with that horrendous defense win the game. So the crying after the game wasn't because he's emotional and light skinned. The crying after the game is, bro, I gave my all for my team and it wasn't enough.
Defense.
But the maturity issues, yeah, as always, but you know. But the maturity issue is in, you know, when he throws an interception or when he has a fumble. He'll blame other people instead of himself. He has this passive aggressive thing where, you know, when it comes to talking to the media, you know, he'll say things, you know, like, well, we gotta start being more efficient with our run game. You know, it's just little things like that that worry me from a maturity aspect. There's also some things I've heard that he's done off the field. It's nothing crazy, like he hasn't hit a woman or nothing like that, but just some things that he's done. And
well, he's hitting no strip clubs. You know it's L.A.
you could say that, yeah.
So if anything, he may be another James Harden is what I'm hearing. Which, yeah, hey, if you're going out there and you're doing your thing on the field, I don't got no problem with how many dollars you want to throw in the club. Now, how big is the gap between Caleb Williams and the rest of the quarterbacks in the class, such as a Michael Penix, a Jaden Daniels, and a Drake May? Because that's been another popular narrative that I've been hearing. Drake May is better than Caleb Williams. Michael Penix is better than Caleb Williams.
Yeah, so as far as the other quarterbacks in this class go, the gap between Caleb Williams and Drake May is like, you know, here, right? It's not Bryce and CJ, but it's like here, right? Like, it's like a gap, but it's not to a point to where it's like Caleb Williams is out of this world better than Drake May. Like, you could actually have a conversation about it.
Absolutely.
Caleb Williams and Michael Penix and Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels and Spencer Rattler, insert name, whoever you want to put in there, it's not close. And the reason why is two. One, the athleticism. Other than Jaden Daniels, no quarterback in this class is the athlete that Caleb Williams is. Not one. It's not up for debate. Two, no one in this class has a better arm than Caleb. Caleb's arm is phenomenal. Like, it's not like Bryce's arm to where it's good. It's great because of the accuracy. It's not good because of the strength. But he has both. He has the arm strength and the accuracy. He throws good from the pocket and on the move. He operates well in chaos and without chaos. A lot of those quarterbacks I just named can't do those things. Michael Penix isn't as efficient throwing on the run. Jaden Daniels isn't as efficient throwing from the pocket in structure all the time. Bo Nix is not as efficient when the play breaks down. When he gets outside the pocket, he's less accurate than he is when he's in the pocket in short, throwing a pass outside. So it's like almost comparing, you know, grapes to oranges. It's like they're not the same.
And you bring up Michael Penix. Michael Penix had an incredible performance a couple of days ago against Texas in the Sugar Bowl. This dude was looking really impressive when it came to his deep ball accuracy. He had really good pocket movement and pocket presence. He's had an extensive injury history. Like, nearly every single year he played at Indiana, his season got cut short. Where do you think he's going to end up getting drafted at? Are the medicals going to come back positive? Is this going to be something that hinders him from being a top 15 pick? Because, I mean, I would love to see this dude in a black and gold. So let him fall all the way down to Pittsburgh. And I pray to God we scoop him up, because God knows we need some quarterback help. What do you think about Michael Penix? Where would you draft him?
Yeah, so I am, as we've talked about in our private conversation, JT, I'm not a prisoner of the moment. So the Sugar Bowl didn't really, like, sway me either way. Like, I already had my feelings on Penix, and I like him. But what I can say about Penix, I have his scouting report pulled up right here. The downfield accuracy obviously stands out. You saw it on the throws to Romo Odunze, the throws to Jalen Polk, right, in the Sugar Bowl. The downfield accuracy is outstanding. Processes and goals through his reads really well. And despite not having the strongest arm, he throws with some nice zipping velocity, right? I mean, some of those throws that came off of his hand at the Sugar Bowl looked like they came out of a rocket. Now, when you look at him, he doesn't look like a guy with a strong arm. But when you can throw in zipping velocity, your arm strength doesn't matter.
Where would you rank his arm strength? Like, 1 through 5? Because I remember last year watching him against Oregon State, and I don't mean like 2023 season, 2022, when they were playing like 40-mile-per-hour wind gusts, and he threw a 40-yard dot and 40-mile-per-hour winds and a cover two hole shot. So where is his arm strength on a 1 through 5 scale for you?
I give him a 4. It's not great. It's good. But I think what he makes up for it with is his accuracy. Now, something that I was wanting to see more of was more consistent accuracy, you know, in the intermediate, specifically to the outside intermediate areas of the field, and he improved on that this season. So as far as where I would take him, I am comfortable taking him starting at pick 14, 15. Mid first round is where I'm comfortable taking him if I'm a quarterback needy team. But where I think he will go, it all obviously all depends on the medicals, right? All depends on, because this man is coming off, you know, 2 torn ACLs, a shoulder injury, and they all had, you know, to be season-ending injuries. So it all depends on how these teams feel about its medicals. But I truly think Michael Penix is going to go between 20 and 40. I think he's going to be a late first to a mid second. And the reason I say that is because, you know, with the injury, when we find out about how teams feel about the medicals at the combine, that's when I'll be able to, you know, comfortably say, okay, top 15. Like, just because I'm comfortable with taking him top 15 doesn't mean the other NFL teams are. You know what I'm saying? I've learned that lesson as we've gone through this scouting thing a couple of times, where it's like, just because you like a player at a certain point, you also have to evaluate where certain teams would like players. Because the injuries, you know, history, it does matter. Now, maintaining a bill of health for 2 years will help that. But as far as right now, as far as what I would do, I'm comfortable taking him about starting at pick 14 for NFL teams. I think the 20s to the mid 40s would be where they are comfortable taking him. Because at the end of the day, he is a very, very good, you know, pocket passer. So, yeah.
Now, his mobility, is that something that is going to be useless once he gets to the NFL? Is he not going to be able to move outside the pocket or pick up anything with his legs at all? Because the injuries that he suffered at Indiana definitely took away from his athleticism. He used to be really mobile, like a really great athlete. And all of a sudden, it kind of looks like he's a little bit shot in a sense. When we saw him running in the Sugar Bowl, it's like, it kind of looked a little bit weird to me. You feel me? Like, he was picking up yards, but it looked a little bit weird, if you get what I'm saying. So it's like, is he just going to be one of those guys that's just strictly going to be able to move in the pocket and that's about it? And he's going to be a statue elsewhere, or he could pick up a little bit of yards here and there?
Yeah, so I think, and this is something that we discussed on a little bit on our first episode of our podcast, called 100 Yards in Context. We've gotten to the point as far as quarterbacks, not only in the NFL, but just quarterbacks in general, where the pocket passer only is kind of going extinct, right? So my rule is, and how I evaluate quarterbacks is, can you get me 7 on 3rd and 6? I think Michael Penix can get you 7 on 3rd and 6 if you need it. But he's not just going to take it every time. You know, he's going to be a guy that's going to try to pat the ball. He's going to try to throw the ball to the right place. And also, I think that he's type of – there's some quarterbacks that only run in big games or big situations. I will classify him more as that, as to where he's willing to run, but only when it really matters and you got to have it. I think at the end of the day, those injuries are something that still factors into his mind. But I wouldn't classify him as immobile. You know, he's not Jared Goff. You know, I think that he can move – and manipulate the pocket well enough and even scramble well enough, you know, to pick up yardage if it need be.
Sean Payton needs a quarterback. And we know how with Drew Brees, he wants somebody that's operational in the pocket, gets the ball out fast, can go through progressions and plays well within structure. Does Michael Penix fit the mold of a Sean Payton quarterback?
Yeah, so my comp for Michael Penix Jr., giving it to you early, you guys are getting the goods here, is Phillip Rivers. So I think, first of all, Sean Payton can work with anyone. This is the same coach that had Taysom Hill at a 4-1 record in the 2021 NFL season. So Sean Payton can work with any quarterback, but a quarterback as talented, you know, with his arm as Michael Penix would fit, you know, great. But Sean Payton, one, because he would be able to trust him to throw the ball down the field. And as of right now, we don't know how it's going to work out. But as of right now, they have, you know, guys like Marvin Mims, guys like Jerry Jeudy, guys that can stretch the field, guys that are good route runners. So Michael Penix would be able to hit those hole shots, be able to hit those seam routes for them and everything. As far as, you know, everything else, like, you know, processing, reading defenses. Like I said, you know, that's one of Penix's strengths. And also, I think that Payton would like him due to the fact that he's 24, right? So he's older. So it's like you're getting a rookie who has some experience, who has some, you know, awareness of how things work, to where the speed of the game, the learning the playbook won't be as, you know, won't need to be as simplified as will be for like an Anthony Richardson or, you know, a young developing quarterback. You get what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think Sean Payton would honestly be a person who if I'm the Broncos, I'm thinking about trading up for Michael Penix or someone like that.
Me and you last year around this time were both high on Bryce Young. What the hell has went wrong with him in Carolina, bro? It's been a fucking shit show down there. The coaching staff has failed him. The roster has failed him. But how much of Carolina's terrible season lies on Bryce Young?
Yeah, so for me, I think you said it in your statement, in the way you set up your question, you know, it's failed him, right? Because Jonathan Mingo was their second-round draft pick, right? Wide receiver. Do you want to know what Jonathan Mingo's separation rate was this season?
I really don't, but...
it was 50.3. That ranks third worst in the entire NFL. The entire league. So... when you factor that in, when you factor that Bryce Young is one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL, when you factor in that his offensive play caller got switched 3 times and then got fired being his head coach, I mean, he was never set up for success in Carolina. It was almost like, hey, we have number one pick. We have Bryce Young. So that's all that matters. We're going to be fine. And that's not how it works all the time. There are going to be times where you're going to have to surround that number one pick with talent. It's the same thing that the Chicago Bears are looking at right now. It's do you trade Justin Fields, start over with that fresh new quarterback, or do you surround Justin Fields with the talent that he deserves and see what you got? So, yeah, for Bryce, it's not that, you know, what's going on with him. It's why would a team draft him and have a proper plan on how to make him successful?
What? Now, the Alabama Bryce Young, I felt, looked way better than the Bryce Young that we've seen in the NFL. And there's things that he never did at Alabama that he's doing in the National Football League. His decision-making was never this bad. Is it the speed of the game has been too much for him, or has he just been getting his ass kicked so bad to the point where he just has lost all sense of what he used to be? And plus his athleticism, like for a guy that's 5'10", maybe 5'9", maybe smaller, like this dude doesn't move like incredibly well. And that kind of shocks me because in the SEC, you're going against some of the best athletes in college football. So if you can be able to sustain and be this size in the SEC, you would think that this would somewhat be able to translate to the NFL to a certain extent. Like, What things have you seen out of Bryce Young that have alarmed you from a regression standpoint?
So I wouldn't categorize it as regression. I would categorize it as, look at the offensive lines that he had in Alabama and look at the line he has now. That's not to say that there aren't some plays to where he's holding the ball too long. He's not identifying the blitzers. He's getting fooled on blitzes. But there's a clear difference in the protection that he had when he was at Alabama and the protection that he has in Carolina. That line is horrible. And being that he's 5'9", he needs to have a strong line in front of him so that he can get the ball out quickly to those receivers. Because that's the difference between college and pro. In college, everything is fast, but everybody's at the same, pretty much the same speed and the same mental. In the NFL, everything is faster, and people may be faster or slower, but the mental is there. So, you know, I think the best example of that is the first game of the year for the Carolina Panthers. Bryce Young threw two picks to the same person in the same defensive coverage because they were baiting him into it. A lot of times when Bryce was on the field at Alabama, he was the smartest person on the field. So when you're not the smartest person on the field anymore and you're also behind a bad offensive line with receivers that aren't getting open, you're going to have times and plays where you look like, you know, you've regressed. But in reality, it's a totality type situation. It's like, yes, he did not make all the throws, all the plays that he made at Alabama when he was a Heisman Trophy winner. But a lot of it has more to do with his situation more than him as a talent. Because this also, there was also some times on tape I saw him make some of those same plays that were drops. Make some of them same plays that, you know, the receiver didn't run his route at a good enough depth. See what I'm saying? So it's just a lot of factors that go into it. But overall, I think that Bryce did not have the year that he anticipated. But I think if the Carolina Panthers are smart, they this offseason will be able to surround him with more talent, surround him with better receivers, give him more offensive linemen, and he'll have a much better season next season.
Puka Nacua has been without a doubt the best rookie wideout in the NFL this year, and he was a fifth round selection. Where the hell did teams miss on Puka Nacua at, or what was wrong with him coming out of BYU that allowed the Rams to get such a big steal?
To be honest, on Puka, I think a lot of it was the school he went to. I think after the Zach Wilson situation, I think they saw BYU as kind of like, you know, you guys produce athletes and everything, but it's hard to see what you guys do in that scheme and that system translating to the NFL. What they forgot was is that sometimes it's not about the scheme, it's about the players. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I did not watch much of Puka Nacua's tape when he was coming out of BYU. But from what I did see a nice route runner. I did see someone who had the ability to stretch the field at times. But I think what happened with Puka was he had a little bit of a injury history at BYU. So maybe the medical scared them away. But beyond that, what he did in the preseason, what he did this season for the Los Angeles Rams was outstanding. Simply put, it was outstanding. And honestly, I think the bigger question is, did they find their new wide receiver one? Because when you look at the targets, Puka is getting more targets than Kupp. Not just, you know, pre-injury, but post-injury from Cooper Kupp coming back. So the Rams might have not only lucked into, you know, the offensive rookie of the year potentially, but they might have found their Cooper Kupp replacement. Because Cooper Kupp, as I'm sure maybe we'll talk about another time, he's looking like he's on the downside for his career.
Quickly.
So yeah, which is very, very interesting. So yeah, Puka Nacua, man, shout out to you. You're a stud, and I need to start taking BYU players more seriously.
Yeah, bro, because that I saw this dude. I heard Brett Coleman talking about him, And when I saw him pop up on my fantasy football draft and I just need to fill out some guys on the bench, I'm like, man, fuck it. Like, Brett Cummins was high on this dude. I don't know too much about him, but I like his name. Puka Nacua sounds pretty cool to me. Sounds fun to say. I'm going to pick him up. Next thing you know, I start him in my lineup. Week two, I was like, holy shit. Like, this dude just might win me my league. Now, of course, like, I still lost my league. Didn't even make it to the playoffs. And I had Tank Dell, too, by the way. You feel me? The Puka Nacua story is crazy as hell. And what about this other rookie that keeps going crazy for the Los Angeles Rams that's in the rookie of the year conversation on the defense side of the football? I'm pretty sure you know who I'm talking about. I'm trying to think.
Kobe Turner.
Exactly.
Kobe Turner,
him.
Interior pass rusher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Rams, other than the Detroit Lions, other than Houston Texans, might have had one of the best drafts from the class of 2023. Because not only do they have their, you know, potential Cooper Kupp replacement, but now when Aaron Donald gets sick of you guys losing, now you have an interior defender that can have a similar type impact. I mean, Kobe Turner has 9 sacks, bro. 9. On a line with Byron Young, on a line with Aaron Donald. Like, that's a lot of production from the inside, you know, getting to the quarterback. So, but I knew about Kobe Turner. That's the thing. I knew about Kobe Turner. I knew that he was really good. I think he was a senior bowl guy as well, like Puka. So, yeah, I'm not surprised by his success. He was one of my favorite interior defensive linemen, one of our favorite at the department. Yeah. What he's doing is not surprising. I thought that he would go a little later than he did, but regardless, he's having an outstanding season, and I love the fact that, you know, he gets to learn from Aaron Donald. Because a lot of these guys, when they come to the league, when they have early success, they're either on bad teams or they have bad leaders. What better interior defensive lineman to learn from than Aaron Donald, bro? I mean, he's probably one of the greatest ever. So, yeah, shouts out to Kobe Turner. He was a very, very fun prospect to scout, and I'm glad that his rookie season is going the way it's going.
I'm looking at it right now. Byron Young, he has 7 sacks. It's just like the Rams just were the gift that kept on giving. It's like they went from fuck those picks to now we about to kill you with all these picks. And they had one of the biggest draft hauls out of any team, undrafted, during the draft. It's crazy how they've just dominated the draft, and it looks like they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the NFC for the next foreseeable future. Last thing before we let you get on out of here, you know we got to talk about it. We're going to have the NFL's most anticipated quarterback decision in the history of this league. Everybody wants to know what the hell is going to happen with Justin Fields. Rather, if you're a Bears fan or a Packers fan or a fan of anybody else, everybody's discussing Justin Fields' future. I believe the Bears should just move on from Justin Fields. He's not a bad quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's a middle-of-the-pack quarterback. You see, what Justin Fields is that you get these splash games like Atlanta when he went off and he became the new part-time owner of the Falcons. But then you get performances like what we saw against the Cleveland Browns when he doesn't look that good. And people like to make excuses. Well, the line isn't this and the wide receivers aren't that. But we were making these same excuses for Justin Fields last year. You get DJ Moore. You get an improved offensive line. You got one of the best rookie offensive tackles in the league in Darnell Wright. So at this point, I think it's better for Chicago to just reset, start over. Justin Fields gets a fresh start. I just don't see the consistency as a passer to be sustainable for Chicago to have success. He will be much suited going to an offensive-minded coach. Not saying it has to be Arthur Smith, but even though Kevin O'Connell, somebody who just has a better understanding of how to maximize a talent like this, because the talent is there. You feel me? Like, Justin Fields, if he goes to the right coach, this dude is damn near a top 5, top 10 quarterback in the league. It's just that who can help him take that next step as a passer? So what do you think the Bears should do? Should they keep him or should they trade him?
I disagree with you. I think they should keep him. And the reason why is, so earlier this season, I would have agreed with you because of how he played. But since he's come back from his thumb injury, he's been lights out, bro. I get the Bears game, but what they were able to do to Detroit, what they were able to do to Atlanta, you know, what they were able to do to the other teams they played since then. I think they played Minnesota as well. Yeah, he's been fantastic. I think DJ Moore went over 1,000 yards a couple games ago. Now he's at 1,300. Like, their connection has been outstanding. He's got like a 73% completion rate when he throws to DJ Moore. That connection is outstanding. And beyond that, he's just learning now how to manage his athleticism, which is something I was very big on. I did a film session on it at the channel. Just learning how to, when it's time to go as a runner and when it's time to stay as a passer. And he seemed like he's mastered that now. He's sliding. He's avoiding bigger hits. You know what I'm saying? And overall, I think the city and the fans are behind him. You know, when you have a city or your team that you play for is chanting, "We want Fields," during your game, as an ownership, how can you trade that young man? How? You're the people are telling you what they want. And beyond that, you know, I get the whole improved line, you have wide receiver DJ Moore, but we both know that's not enough. You know, the Eagles had Devontae Smith. They still traded for AJ Brown.
Yep. So you're saying Marvin Harrison Jr. and it is deadly. It's up from there.
Well, not just that, but they also have their pick. They have the first pick from the Panthers, but they also have their pick. They could package that pick and move up for offensive tackle. They could take another wide receiver. They could take a tight end. They could do whatever they want. If you're going to make a decision about trading a quarterback, in my humble opinion, you have to see that quarterback at their best with the best possible arsenal you have to offer. The Chicago Bears are going to lead the NFL besides, I think, the Cardinals in cap space this offseason. If you don't surround Justin Fields with all the talent that you can and see what you got, at that point, you played yourself. Because guess what? If you trade him to another team and they do that, and then Justin Fields go to a championship game or a Super Bowl, how are you going to feel? You're going to be stuck with Caleb Williams and DJ Moore and cap space. And DJ and for context, Caleb Williams might not have the same feeling about being stuck with DJ Moore as Justin Fields has right now. Yeah. So it's give and take, you know what I'm saying? It's a tough decision, but at the end of the day, in my opinion, I think you go with the safer unknown. Because that's all the draft picks are, right? That's all that young players are, right? Unknown. The safer unknown is the unknown that you've seen the past few years, and the unknown that you wouldn't have to, you know, change life in your franchise over. You know, if you draft Caleb Williams number one, you have to, you know, put him into the system that you have. With Justin Fields, you're just adding to the system. You're adding a Marvin Harrison Jr. You're adding potentially a Brock Bowers, Romo Odunze, whoever you want to add as a pass catcher. You're adding an offensive lineman like Joe Alt or Olufoshanu or J.C. Latham. You're adding to the piece of the puzzle. And you have players on your team supporting him. DJ Morris came out several times and said, "Fuck all the Caleb Williams talk. Like, Justin Fields is my quarterback." When you have your wide receiver one, who you traded for, by the way, saying stuff like that, I mean, what can ownership say? Are you really going to sit there and tell your fans after Justin Fields performed the way he's performed after his injury, after the fans are chanting for him to stay, after players on our team are saying Justin Fields is our QB1, you're going to trade him? Come on, man. If the Bears trade him, then the Bears are the Bears.
And I like Justin Fields. You know, he's arguably my favorite player in the league. I just want to see him, you know, I really want to see him go to Minnesota or the Atlanta Falcons without Arthur Smith. If they were to trade for Justin Fields and hire Ben Johnson in Atlanta with what they have and Justin Fields, oh my goodness. Like, I'm just trying to push an agenda, bro. Like, I really want to see him with the offensive-minded coach. I don't trust Matt Eberflus to make the right decision at OC. I do feel like they're underutilizing him and his strengths, and he hasn't really developed to, you know, his full potential yet. But if, like you said, they had cap space. They do have a lot of draft capital to, you know, improve the team around them. But it's like, damn, bro, Minnesota with Jay Jettas, Jordan Addison, a healthy TJ Hawkinson, with Kevin O'Connell dialing up the plays. Like, I don't see how the Vikings don't win the Super Bowl with that. I don't see how the Falcons on the threat in the NFC with that. But at the same time, if you're a Bears fan, you're like, man, F those teams, bro. Like, we love Justin. And they would chant, we want Justin the other day. So, I mean, hey, you know, like, I personally just want to see him with the proven head coach. That's all I have. You feel me? I don't really think it's necessarily like he's not good enough to lead Chicago to success. I really just don't like the regime that's around him. But everybody, this is my guy, Artie, NFL scout, director of Film Is a Art. Make sure that you guys go ahead, subscribe to this channel, check out this podcast. Let the people know where they can find you at and what you got planned for the channel and the pod over the next couple of months.
Yeah, thank you again for having me, JT. Appreciate you as always, brother. And it's draft season, y'all. So we are a lot rocking and rolling. We've released three all 22 film sessions on players from the upcoming class. Jaden Daniels, Keon Coleman, wide receiver from Florida State, and Braylon Allen, the running back from Wisconsin. So we're rocking and rolling. As JT also said, we have our podcast called 100 Yards in Context. It's a podcast exclusively and primarily dedicated to, you know, NFL draft content and some light NFL content as well. And then we also have our weekly NFL pregame show called the Sunday Spiral, where we get you ready for, you know, the NFL action that you should expect to see that next week. So we have a lot to offer. We have a lot out. We're probably going to have, I think, in excess of over 100 videos come out over the next 4 to 5 months. So if you ever get bored, need to go down a rabbit hole, come to Film Is a Art. We got your back.
All right, everybody, this is Artie. Make sure you guys go check him out one last time. Film Is a Art. Link will be down in the description and pinned comment section. He has a podcast out also. And don't forget to give the JT Sports Podcast a 5-star review. We are available on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. Y'all know where to find the JT Sports Podcast. Appreciate you guys for tuning in, and we will see you guys shortly with another episode.